Hi, I'm Pam. I'm an addict. And first of all, I'd like to thank God and the committee for having me here. And, you know, when I think about Never Alone, I always think about unity. And it is true that the ties that bind us together are stronger than would tear us apart. And I have to tell you a little bit about how I was raised, because that made me who I am today. And through Narcotics Anonymous, I learned that I could be a different person than the way I was raised, because I never knew, when I got in here, I never knew how to be anything. I knew how to use drugs, and when I got in here, I was so afraid of people. You scared me to death, and your hugs and your kind words and stuff like that I wasn't used to. So it was very hard for me when I first came into the program to even be able to give anything back, because I was so empty inside. I was raised in a military family. My father was in the service. We moved around a lot. When I was learning how to speak, I was in so many different countries and so many different, around so many different nationalities that I wasn't able to speak properly. So I had to go to speech therapy, I think, when I was in sixth grade, and I felt really different, because everybody else around me could speak okay, but I couldn't, because my R's and my different kinds of words that I was learning, I was going from California to this, you know, to Pennsylvania, to West Virginia. And if anybody knows all those different states, they talk a lot different. And so I got over that, and I was able to learn how to speak okay. And the last place we spent any kind of time was Washington, D.C. And as you know, I'm white, and I never had a prejudice bone in my body, you know. And along comes Martin Luther King and the riots, and all of a sudden I'm getting beat up, you know, and I'm getting, you know, cussed at, and I always had real long hair, and my hair's getting pulled, and I go home to my mother, and I said, "Mom, what's going on? These people are supposed to be my friends." And that was the first thing I ever learned about color and prejudice and those kind of things. I never had a clue in the world about those kind of things. So I got through that. And like I said, we moved from Washington, D.C. to PG County. And once again, I felt very alone. I was totally different than the rest of the kids. You know, I had, I talked different. Things they did, you know, the store was like, the first store that you could even get to was a mile away. I'm used to walking everywhere and just doing a lot of different things. So for the first few months, I felt very alone. I felt like I didn't fit in, and I started going back to D.C. a lot. Now, I'm like probably, what, 11 years old. I have an older brother and an older sister. We're jumping on buses, and we're going back to D.C. So what I had to learn in life is that I had to learn that I had to start fitting in places, you know, that this is where I was going to be, and I had to make the best of where I was going to be. I couldn't run anymore. I'm a runner. If something happens, or something ain't going right in my relationship, or you're my friend and you piss me off, I used to just run. I don't need you, and that's it. You know, we're through, you go find another girlfriend, and I'll go find me another friend, and there's plenty of men in the world, and I don't need you, and this is the kind of way I carried myself. Needless to say, I married an alcoholic at the age of 17. I got married in my 12th grade year. My father was very, very strict. He had two rules. You didn't get pregnant before you got married, and you graduated from school. So I got married when I was 17. I was in my 12th grade year. There again, I was different. I married 17-year-old in 12th grade. But what I'm trying to tell you is all through my life, I made myself different. You know, no one made me different. I made myself different. When I was growing up, I got molested at a very young age. So I learned not to trust. I learned that I was very afraid of men. I learned my parents weren't my protectors, you know, that they couldn't protect me, or they didn't want to protect me. I come from an alcoholic family. So as I said, as I was growing up, I really didn't trust anybody. And Like I said, I made myself different in a lot of ways. I got married at 17. I did graduate because that was one of my father's rules. I got into drugs when I was about 15. When I was 17, I stopped using drugs, and I said that was the only way I was going to graduate. So I stopped using drugs, and I stayed clean, and I was alone again. The people I used drugs with didn't want anything to do with me, and the people that were clean didn't want anything to do with me. I spent my 12th grade year very lonely, but I had a goal in mind that I was going to graduate, and I was able to do that. On the way to graduation, up the aisle, someone handed me a joint of green and a pint of liquor, and I'm telling you, that's all it took. I've been clean probably for a year, knew nothing about Narcotics Anonymous, knew nothing about anything else. I just had a goal in mind, and I achieved that goal, and I was back to the races. In that time, I got a divorce. I started running, you know, running hard again. So my next husband, I lived with for 6 years. He was a drug dealer. I got into drugs real heavy. I was raped during that relationship because of drugs, all as a result of drugs. So now I'm really feeling bad about myself, you know. And I continue to do drugs. And I moved out of that house because I couldn't no longer stand the drug dealing that was going on there. But I still wanted to do my drugs, but I just didn't want to be involved in the drug dealing part. And an old boyfriend of mine came back into my life, and he had been going to Narcotics Anonymous. And he told me that there was a better way to live. I went to meetings not because I wanted to get clean. I went to meetings because I wanted that man. And that's how I did it. I got into Narcotics Anonymous. I got into a treatment center. Now here, living with other people the way I was, sharing bathrooms and rooms and all that kind of stuff, I did not go for that. When I first got in that treatment center, I tore that place apart because I used to own a cleaning business and I used to be very, very much a perfectionist. I tore every bathroom, every window, every kitchen cabinet, everything. I cleaned that place spotless. And when I got to the meeting that they have about, you know, where you say what you want to say, I told them all they were slobs, they were filthy, and that I didn't know how in the hell they lived the way they did. And if they lived like that, I hate to see what they lived like on the streets. And needless to say, I got a lot of mouth after that about who did I think I was. And I said, well, who do you think I am? You know, because it was all about me. It wasn't about anybody else. It was all about me because I was perfect. I was a high-class drug addict, and I dare you to look down on me. And let me tell you something. When I was in that treatment center, I learned a lot about my ass. I learned that I was self-centered, that I thought I did all these nice, wonderful things for everybody else. I wanted what I wanted, and if I thought that I could get you to do what I wanted by doing certain things, I'd do it. And they made me sit on my bed every day, and I wasn't allowed to get up for an hour because I was also, like, super hyper. You know, I just could never sit down. So, therefore, I never could get to know anybody because I couldn't stand still long enough to talk to you, you know. And when I came into Narcotics Anonymous, I was so angry and so hurt and so miserable that you better not try to hug me because I'd stare you down. I would just do anything for you not to come near me. Well, thank God there were some people in the program that loved me because I couldn't love myself. And they hugged me even when I couldn't love myself. I hated people, and I was scared to death. But they came and hugged me, and they told me they loved me. And, you know, my girlfriend Laura can't be here, but she saw right through me, and she always made sure that she talked to me. When I got into the program, we were a lot smaller than this, and everybody knew everybody. Everybody knew each other's name, and we sponsored men, we sponsored women. We got together in a van, and we went to meetings all over the place, and that's when I finally started softening up. See, I went out after meetings, but I didn't talk to you. I didn't hug you, and they let me sit there anyway because they knew not to get near me because they were afraid they were going to run me off. But like I said, women were always in my life. I hated women. I couldn't stand you. I didn't want you near my boyfriend. I didn't want you near my husband, because I always had a boyfriend and a husband. I didn't always just, you know, it wasn't just one. I always had to have one in case the other one told me that we were over. I had to have something else because I was so miserable with myself that I had to have somebody love me. And I didn't care if I was married or not. I had to have a boyfriend because if my husband left me, then I'd be alone. So it took a lot of growing up in here. And like I said, I had women love me and hug me and tell me that it was all right. And no matter how mean I looked or how, you know, much I hated them, that they were going to love me anyway. And I think that's where the unity comes in. You know, a lot of people say women stick with women and men stick with men. Well, in the beginning, when I got here, there wasn't a lot of anybody. So we took care of each other, you know. And, you know, I think the most wonderful thing my sponsor ever told me is one time I told her that guy over there is married and he's messing with that girl over there. And she told me, Pam, Narcotics Anonymous is just like the real world. And people are going to do things that are wrong in here, and people are going to do things you don't like. But the best thing you can do is hang around with the winners, get a sponsor, talk to that sponsor, get a network, get people to sponsor, and mind your own business. You know, and someone like me, that was hard for me to do. Because, see, if I could fix you, I didn't have to look at me. So that was hard for me to do. I mean, what do you mean? And gossip? Oh, I learned that the hard way. My sponsor told me that I have a responsibility in here, and that is to mind my own business and help the addict that's suffering. Now, if I'm talking about the addict that's suffering, am I helping that addict? No. I'm making that addict feel alone, feel like they can't trust anybody. And I've known people in here that have told their sponsees to step. Now, if that would have been me, I would have kicked your ass first, and then I would have probably left. So, you know, I know for me that there's certain things that I have to do. I'm not perfect, and I slide sometimes, but my network will tell me in a minute what's going on with you, you know, not what's going on with somebody else, what's going on with you. And that's always been hard for me to look at me. So anyways, I go along, and the guy that introduced me to the program is now dead. He died of an overdose in D.C. in a hotel room. And that was real hard for me to take because I had known this guy since I was 13. And he was my first boyfriend. And he was always there for me, and we were always there for each other. And I thank God that he introduced me to this program. But the sad thing is that not all of us make it. You know, I've lost many people in this program, clean and using. And, you know, we got to, you know, reach our hand out. You know, I don't care if somebody comes back in this program 20 times. I'm going to reach my hand out, and I'm going to give them a hug and tell them that I love them, and I'm glad they're back. I've seen people act snotty, like they're too good to hug that person because they've been in here 10 or 15 times. Well, let me tell you something. I'm not too good because, you know what, they might be my next sponsor, you know. If I'm acting like I'm too good to anybody in this room, I'm going to go back out there because I can't forget where I came from. And I've seen it too many times. You know, all it takes is a hug and welcome back. And, you know, that doesn't mean you have to hang around with that person or whatever. But, you know, let them know they're welcome because I don't want to be out on that street again and nobody reached their hand out to me. I wouldn't be here today if people didn't reach their hand out to me. And that's been really important to me. You know, and like I said, I'm not perfect. I remember 5 years into recovery, I get back in the relationship with my daughter's father. My daughter found out when she was 8 years old that her dad wasn't her dad. And I found out when she was 8 years old that my husband was not her father. And this man had been in prison 10 years. He comes out and he says, "That's my kid." And I said, "What? That's not your kid. I'll prove it to you. I'll go get a test." Well, come to find out, that was not my husband's daughter. That was the man that had just spent 10 years in prison. That was one of the hardest things I ever did in my life, have to tell my husband and my daughter. That was so painful. But I had to do it, you know. And I wasn't alone in that. You know, I called my sponsor. And, you know, she told me that, you know, she's there for me. You know, I never have to go through one problem in this program by myself. And dumb me gets back 5 years clean, gets back in a relationship with this man, and he starts beating me. Well, I hate to tell you, I ain't never let no man lay his hands on me. Well, I learned a new fear that I had never felt in my life before. It was like when they say, if you tell anybody I'm going to kill you, I knew that he meant it, and I was afraid to death. I hid it for a long time in the program. I didn't tell anybody. See, we're as sick as our secrets. I told nobody, and I kept getting beat on. So I decided I couldn't tell anybody in the program, so I went to Center for Abused Persons. He drove me there. He waited outside while I went to my session. He waited outside while I went to my women's group. But you know what? I didn't care. I knew I had to get help somewhere. And for some reason, I wasn't able to do it in the program. Well, after I went to some meetings, I was able to tell my sponsor. Then I was able to tell my network. And guess what? One night he hit me. I got a butcher knife, put it to his throat, and said, "You lay your hands on me again, and you're dead." Okay. So I took the power back, and now I'm out of that relationship, and, you know, that was scary for me. I had never been that afraid in all my life. As many drugs as I bought, and many times I almost, you know, OD'd, and all that stuff, but see, I would have got out of all that faster if I would have shared it with somebody in the program. But, you know, that's what I'm telling you. It doesn't matter how much time you have. If you stop sharing, you start getting alone again, you stop going to meetings, you stop doing all those things, you're going to be alone again. And that's the worst feeling in the world, is to be alone. I guess it was 9 years in recovery. I got ovarian cancer, and they told me I had a year to live. I had a 8-year-old daughter, and I had no husband, no, you know, nothing. I remember my sponsor went to me to the doctor's office, and they told me I had a year to live. And I had to make a decision then what I was going to do. So I decided that I had to tell my daughter. I had to tell my family. But you know what? Everybody in this program, I got checks in the mail, no signatures, no cards, just money in the envelope. I never once went hungry. I always had money. My daughter's school, which was in a private school, they paid for her to go to private school. They didn't ask me for a dime. That's God. That's the program. I wasn't alone during that time. I had people come to the hospital. My sponsors used to tease me because I used to say, "Come on to the hospital, you know. I'm not doing nothing but laying here." And they did. They came and we talked, and, you know, people just supported me so much. And you know what? Today I got 10 years in remission, and they said I had a year. That's God in the program. See, when I was growing up, I always went to church. And I always said, "God, I don't know why I'm still coming to church. You let me get molested. You let me get beat up. You let me live in an alcoholic family. You let this happen to me. You let that happen to me." And you know what I realized when I got in the program? That was not God. That was the other evil side trying to get me on his side, you know. And I never understood that till I got in this program. But for some reason, I kept going to church. When I got in here, I had this hole in me. And even though I was going to meetings, and I had a sponsor, and I was sharing with people, I still had this hole inside of me. So one night, I just had something come over me, and I got on my hands and knees, and I said, "God, I don't know if it's God still, but I need something to fill this hole inside of me." And I had like what they call a spiritual awakening. And I knew then that I had a God, which I call to choose God. At first, it was just a spiritual person that came to me, and I knew everything was going to be all right. You know, I haven't had to use since I got in treatment. You know, I'll have 18 years, June 6th. And that is only because I follow the directions of the program. I see people come in here, they go to one meeting a week. You know, they don't get a sponsor. They don't work the steps, and they relapse, and they're like, "Why did I relapse? I really didn't want to use." It's a we program. We together can do this. I alone can't, you know, and that was a hard concept for me. You know, I'm going to be a grandmother. You know, my daughter told me that she's pregnant and she's going to have a baby. you know, I'm happy to be a grandmother, but she's not married, and she's doing well in every other area. And, you know, I want to think about all the negative things. She's not married. She hadn't finished school, you know, this and that. And my sponsor's a grandmother, and she's getting ready to be a grandma for the second time. And she told me, Pam, just enjoy the experience. Sometimes I get so wrapped up in all the negative things in the world that I miss the experience. I have learned to stop in the moment and just enjoy that I am able to walk, talk. After I finished chemo, I couldn't hardly talk. I couldn't hardly walk. I couldn't put two thoughts together. I couldn't hardly write. Today, I'm back in my field. I'm an adolescence addictions counselor. I didn't think that would ever happen again because I couldn't do the things that I used to do. But God has blessed me. You know, I almost have full function on my brain, you know. And that's a blessing. You know, my hair grew back. I met people that their hair didn't grow back. So instead of all the negative things in my life, my sponsor tells me when I'm feeling negative and feeling like crap, to step back and think of all the things I have to be grateful for, you know. And to realize that, you know, I could be out there smoking, drinking, laying on the street. My father used to always tell me this. He'd say, Pam, you can go in a bar and you can drink and you can smoke and you can do all that and you can fall down in the corner and everybody's going to be talking about you. But let a man do it, or he just had too much to drink. And, you know, I had to learn when I came in here that I have a responsibility to act a certain way, just like he said in the beginning, you know. Coming to a convention, the first year convention, you know, low cut, tight, you know, all this stuff, looking good, hair, whatever. That's okay. But am I here for the narcotics convention or am I here to pick up a man? Because all my life, I had to have a man. I guess about 2 years ago, no, it's probably been about 4 years or 4 years ago, I went almost 2 years with no sex, no man. And let me tell you something, that was growth for me. And I learned a lot about me. I learned a lot about me. Because, you know, in the beginning, when they say, don't get in a relationship, that's bull. I've seen people go 2 years in the beginning and never get in a relationship, and they picked up the most effed up person, and that's the next person they're with. So, to me, take time to get to know yourself and who you are so you know what you want. Because I didn't even know who I was, much less what kind of man I wanted. You know, what do I have to bring to the table? If I have nothing to bring to the table, why am I bothering you? And why are you interested in me when I don't have nothing to bring to the table? You know, today I want to know where you're at in your life, where I'm at in my life, and what we have to offer each other. You know, not what you're going to suck from me and what I'm going to suck from you and, you know, end up making us both go back out. You know, so today I'm in a relationship and it's going okay. And, you know, I'm working on buying a house and I have a good job. And, you know, a few months ago I was so depressed. And guess what it was? I wasn't calling my sponsor as much as I should. I wasn't going to meeting as much as I should. I had put on 20-something pounds. I wasn't exercising. I was eating junk. And then I want to know why I don't feel good. You know, we have to take care of ourselves, you know. When I came in here, I weighed probably 90-something pounds, you know, never ate. There wasn't no time to eat, you know. If I did eat, it was a piece of bread to absorb so I could drink some more liquor or do some more drugs. It was never because I needed to eat. You know, last month or so, I've been exercising. I've been calling my sponsor, going to meetings, you know, and doing, eating right, and guess what? I feel a lot better. But one thing what never alone means to me is that when you're new in here, you need to find a sponsor. A sponsor will lead you to the way of never being alone. We can't just depend on one person. You know, like when I was growing up, I had one friend or one or two boyfriends. You know, I got to depend on a bunch of people. I might not like you, and believe me, that happens in here. I'm not going to like everybody, and everybody's not going to like me. But if you need me, I will be there for you. I don't care if I've cussed you out, you've cussed me out. If I see you hurting, I'm going to walk over and ask you if I can help you. Or I'm going to talk to you or find you someone that can help you. Because I can't, you know, I can't be about that. I'm not going to sit there and let you die just because I don't like you. Because you ain't going to like a lot of people in here. We have these things called personalities. And I was very controlling when I first got in here. So if you were controlling, we clashed. So I wanted you out of my face because you're taking away my control over here. You're trying to control and I'm trying to control. So, you know, we got to learn how to deal with these personalities. But don't ever turn your back on somebody that's hurting, because you're going to go home that night and think, man, did I? If I talk to that person, you find out the next day they used, you're going to be thinking, I could have taken two seconds to talk to that person or guide them towards someone that could help them. Or, you know, you're getting ready to leave a meeting, you see that person's not all right, but you're like, I got to get home. You know, that couple seconds you could have stopped and talked to that person can make the biggest difference in the world. But like I said, and then get you a network. Get you a network of people that you like what they're doing. Don't get you a network of people that are gossiping, that you see are backstabbers, that are doing all that. Guess what? That's what you're going to become. You're going to become, you ever heard, you know, you're what you hang around with? It's the same thing in the program. You got to find people that are going to enhance your recovery, you know. So, if I want someone to enhance my life, they need to be about something, you know. Of course, we're going to have sponsees that are just coming in. You know, we can take care of them. You know, that's a different thing. But when we're looking for a network, these are people that we're going to rely on when our ass is on fire. So we've got to make sure they're willing to answer the phone at 2 o'clock in the morning. If you're not going to answer the phone at 2 o'clock in the morning, tell the person that you're giving your phone number to, don't call me after a certain time. Because that person's ass might be on fire and they're calling you at 2 o'clock in the morning. You're like, what do you want? You know? So we got to give back what we've been given. I always had people that were there, and I knew the people I could call, you know, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, and call them before you use. That's the most important thing. Give yourself a break. Call your sponsor before you use. They don't really want to hear, you know, from you after you use, because you got us on the phone all night talking about bullshit. You know? So I particularly don't want you calling me after you done got high, because, you know, unless you're suicidal. But, you know, besides that, I can hear bullshit all day long. Call me after you come down off your high, and then we'll talk about, you know, what happened. You know? But, I don't know. Like I said, I'm very thankful for this program, and it's given me so much. You know, it's given me my life back, because I thought I had a life, you know, because I did. I had the business going on. I had the man. I had the house. I had the cars. But guess what? 3 months into recovery, I have a major car accident, and I'm on my back for 2 years. Guess what got taken? The man I didn't want anymore because he was still using drugs. The house, all that went, and I had me and my daughter and not a penny at all. And you know what? I was okay. You know, God took care of me, and I got okay. I learned how to live without money that I was used to having a long time because I worked hard for it, and I live with a drug dealer, so I didn't have to pay for my drugs, you know. In one way or the other, I didn't have to pay for them. Right. But, like I said, you know, that's another thing about, I don't know about other women, but, you know, I lay down with my husband a lot of times because I wanted drugs, not because I wanted to sleep with him, you know. So, you know, I had to learn how to get that piece of me back so that I could be somebody that I felt good about, that I could help other people. Because as a woman, I sucked. I had nothing inside. I didn't feel. I didn't care. You know, it was just keeping the man around so that I didn't have to be lonely anymore. And today I'm not about that. You know, I have been able to be faithful for many, many years, and that is growth for me. You know, and I feel good about that. Being a woman, any man I'm with, I'm faithful to. You know, and that feels good for me. That's just one of my big growths. But that used to, you know, bother me in the beginning when I first got clean, that I wasn't capable of being anybody's wife or girlfriend because I wasn't capable of being faithful. That was a big thing for me. And the longer I stayed around here and the longer I got closer to women and women told me what was going on with me, then I learned, you know, what I needed to fix. And one of them was, unfortunately, being alone for almost 2 years. But that was okay. I learned from it, and everything was good. So I'm not going to take all the time up and really thank you all for being here. Okay.
Thank you, Pam, for sharing. Pam was our national speaker. Now we have our international speaker, all the way from Sweden, Andreas.
I'm an addict. My name is Anders. Don't everyone think or believe this fellowship, internal fellowship. But I came 3,000 miles to participate in this convention, hang out with my good friends. Thank you. Thank you. And I also need to cope with the fact that English ain't my natural language. So I can't compare with Pam or anyone else that speaks English fluent. I will do as best I can. And I will, it will be grammatically totally wrong sometimes, but listen to with your heart. I really would like to thank CMP to having me. It's a privilege to come and share, give away what I have. It's really nice. I would like to tell, and I think you also understand that being alone, that's easy to be. I can be alone anywhere if I choose to. And I always been locked out from my feelings, from what I'm feeling, what I doing, all kind of stuff. It's no problems. But when I find the drugs, it makes me okay to speak to other people. It makes me feel a part of. So, yeah. I cleaned up. I went to my first NA meeting 1993, when my little son was born. I went to 3 meetings and I went out and used, and I came back early in 1994, and I haven't used since then. Thank you. You also need to understand that NA in Sweden is a long way back after what you have. We didn't have any recovery text in Swedish. Just a couple of pamphlets, English basic text, English literature. And it's not easy to understand. You see, while I'm standing here, I have to think here, translate it here, and have it out here. So we didn't have anything. So my first 3 years, I was clean. I went to meetings. I did a coffee commitment and that kind of stuff. But when people start to talk about steps, yeah, we talked about the steps, but just 1 minute, and then we threw up what we felt about and blah, blah, blah. Lots of bullshit. Yeah, I can see that today. Today, that's the reality. We talked about stuff that don't belong in there, because when I enter a room, it's a recovery room, and we talk about recovery, not personal issues and that kind of stuff. So, but I remember it was World Convention 1995 in Paris, I think, and some of my friends went there, and they brought back some speaker tapes. And for the first time in my whole this was not a long time, 1.5 year, 2 years I had. And someone explained how to work the program. Working the steps, having a sponsor. I had a sponsor, but I used wine to him. It's not about, a sponsor today is to come up to ask, give me direction, how do I do with this? So, but it gave me something, it fed a hunger in me, so I wanted more, and I went out on the internet, and no, I didn't, but a friend of me that had an internet connection hooked me up with someone that wrote me back and said, yeah, I have some I want the speaker tapes and other collectible items. I didn't have anything, not a t-shirt, not nothing, my first 3 years. No, nothing, just a small pin. So I asked for that stuff, and the man, he wrote and said, yeah, I have some speaker tapes, and I send you a box. Okay. So I went, waited, and forgot about it. And 14 days later, a box arrived with speaker tapes, and I really felt, wow, how can he do that? He don't know me. And he wrote also in the letter that his phone number, so I tried to call him up, and I think my time was 7 p.m., and that's 1 p.m. for you. So it was just an answering machine, but I mumble-jumbled something in on his answering machine, and but he called me back later on that night. And we spoke, and when we decided to hang up the phone, he said, I love you. Uh-oh. What does he want? What does he want? When a man said he loves me, I need to do something for... You understand what I mean, yeah. So I wasn't used to that. we stayed in touch. And I sent money away and added some extra and asked for more spare tapes and the combo tapes. So I think it was the 16th of February, 1997. I asked him to be my sponsor. So I asked him to be my sponsor. He's there. And my friends thought I was nuts, but I don't say this to put any Swedes down, but no one had what I wanted. They were all my buddies, and we wanted something. So me and other guys started to have sponsors from other countries. So we started to work the steps, me and Mike, and it was really strange. It's really strange to stand here, think English, translate here, and have it out. But I did good, and we started to work the steps. And for the first time, I really understood that I can continue to be clean. I can manage to solve living problems. Before I started to work the steps, every month in time, we got money once a month in Sweden. And every month I had to sit down with my calculator, my bills, and my small money. And see, and almost have the kind of lottery to see who bills I can pay this month and that kind of stuff. But I did my responsibility. I called those that couldn't pay this month. I called them up and said, maybe next month. Maybe next month. But that's growth. That's responsibility. So, and for the first time, when I noticed that I understood the first step, first time, was, you see, in Sweden, it's a different culture. Here, everybody have a car. In Sweden, it's not, we have cars, of course, but not everyone. And I have a bicycle, so just a bicycle that you, yeah. And we in Malmö, where I live, it's a really, really windy. It's really, really windy, and it snows, and it's kind of blizzard, snow blizzard. And I bicycled my way to the school, and it was really, really windy, and I was really, really pissed off at God. And then I heard Mike's voice in my head, acceptance and surrender, acceptance and surrender. And I can't do anything about this. And it was really, really, really easy to bicycle after that. It didn't stop snowing, it didn't stop blowing, but it was easy because I surrendered for the fact it's snowing and it's blowing really much. And that's really nice. During the time when I come up to my fourth step, Mike came over and visited me, and we hooked him up for a regional convention in my hometown. And I went down to the ferry and should meet him. And I expected a really big, huge spiritual giant. And I met Mike. He isn't big in that way, but he's a really spiritual giant. Yeah, thank you. And I also need to tell that we continue to work the steps. And I was able to participate in Free State 6, right? Yeah. Free State 6 was 98. And we did some step works at that moment then. And then I had him back for another convention. So realize that the fact that I have seen my sponsor face to face 3 times and I worked through all 12 steps. Every Monday evening, 5:15 your time, I called him. Every Monday evening. And I enjoyed it. And I did what I learned. You see, I think and I Mike has told me recovery is an act of changing our ideas and attitudes. And I really have changed. You see, thank you. Thank you, Betsy. I really, you see, when I come up to 7.5 years clean, I had an event, not an event, but I had something happened at my work. See, I work with addicts, alcoholics, people that lives on the streets, and my boss and I don't share same opinion about people. I love people, and I think everybody deserves to be helped. She just wants to earn money. One guy died at my work, and I did the most common thing for me. I pressed charges to her, to the States, and told something is wrong. I want you to investigate what's wrong. And the result of that, that everybody at my work freaked me out. They didn't speak to me. They didn't say hello. I was really, 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 it's quite like I have the plague. It was really, really, I felt bad about that. And I went through a separation from my fiancé, and I moved back to my old town. And I ended up in that situation that I couldn't put name of the feelings I had in English. So I asked Mark what to do. And he suggested me to have a Swedish sponsor. And I was sponsorless for 14 days or something. You see, I always want the best. So I went around. I didn't get the best. But I get really, really, really good man. After 3 attempts to have some other people. But they always said, this man is going to be good for me. And it's like a hand and a glove. We are the same. It's really, really, really nice. But Mike and Betsy and all those guys here are still my friends, and I really, really feel. Yeah, I always ask Mike also when I have. It's not that I have 2 sponsors. I have 1 friend in the States that have a great knowledge about this program and about the disease of addiction. And I have my sponsor in Sweden. But I always ask Mike about service issues and that kind of stuff. You see, you're so lucky that you have it in your own language. We need to translate and we work. Now they say that Just for Today will take to 2008 to have in Swedish, and that's gruesome. We just had the basic text for 3 years ago, and Mike told me at the moment when we had it released in Swedish that we will grow. Yes, we had grown. We will have a really, really, really nice 18th regional convention in my hometown in January next year, and I invite everyone to want to come. It's a great convention. Not that big as this, but we will probably hit 2,000 people. And that's much. I think when Mike was at the regional convention in 97, I think it was a bit 1,000 people. So we grow, and that's great. So today I am having a new job. I left my work because they buy me out. They gave me money to stop at work. Yeah, and that's good. So I was kind of my free agent for 4 months. But during that time, I hooked my open service from another place. There I feel that they want my compassion, my knowledge, my enthusiasm. So that's really great. I feel that I can't speak that long as Pam did, but NA is truly a worldwide fellowship. I spoke to a friend in Stockholm recently, and he said they start NA in the Baltic countries. That's just on the other side of the... You have Sweden there, and on the other side of the ocean, you have the Baltic seas, you have Poland, you have Russia, you have all those kinds. And NA starts there. They have their first regional convention. There was 40 people attending. So he said that we are going now to collect lots of T-shirts in Sweden and send over to them, because that might help a bit. You see, if you... I didn't have anything the first year I was clean, and then I had almost everything I had. I was really a maniac of collecting stuff, and I don't do that today, but... No, I don't. Use cool items. But I collected all before. I had boxes. Today I give away to newcomers, and I really try to help my fellow addicts in my hometown, and I sponsor a couple of guys as well. That's really nice. I sponsor a guy in North Sweden. That's, if you go with a car, it's 2 days. And he don't have a phone, but he has an internet connection, so we are online at the same time, and that's really great. He works the steps. All my sponsees work the steps. So that's really nice. It's really nice to be here. It's really nice to be a part of. It was really a long journey to come here, but now I am here, and now I have done what... I was really scared to come up here and speak, because I thought you're going to leave because I didn't speak English as good as you do. But... Thank you. Thank you. And what I understand that you coped with the fact that my English ain't that good, but you can hear with your heart, and that I'm really grateful for that. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
I want to thank everyone, thank our speakers. Now, if there's anyone who would like to come up to the podium and speak, you may do so at this time. And kind of remember that there might be more than, there might be others that want to share, so allow them some time. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Kathy, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Kathy.
And I just wanted to share that I have 6 months on the 2nd of May, right. Clean. Thank you. Thank you. You know, I can't deny that I'm not proud of myself, and anybody sitting here, you have to do it one day at a time, and each day is a miracle to
yes.
me that I am clean, that my friends are clean. I've surrounded myself with clean people, and it's amazing to me that I can go out and have fun, and I don't have to be drunk or use drugs. That just will never end amazement in me. This is my first convention. I almost wasn't able to come, but by the grace of God, I'm here, and I thank every one of you every time I go to a meeting, I thank those people for listening and not judging me, being there for me. You know, friends, if it hadn't been for some of my friends, I would not be here, and it was going to crush me. But the personality thing, you know, I'm sorry, I'm human. Bottom line is we're all human beings. You know, we have to remember that, but we also have to give back every day, and service is the way to go. Service, work service, and not only get your mind off of things, you're giving back. We have a valuable gift, excuse me, that we can all share here, and it's worldwide, and that's wonderful. You know, it can be statewide. You know, you go to some of our states, it's like going to another country. Truly is. But I thank God I'm here, and thank you for letting me share, and thank you, God, for letting me be here.
Thank you. Hello, my name's Charlie, and I'm an addict. I'm in my 14th month of recovery. I like to say my second year sounds good. Been planning on coming to this convention for last 2 months or so. I was released in January from a 13-month prison sentence. A lot of my clean time is incarceration, but I had opportunity and I chose to work my steps and work my program. When I came home, my significant other, while I was incarcerated, he was going to wait. Not. Prior to being incarcerated, I was working the program, but I relapsed just before I went into incarceration. I knew I was going away, and as an addict, I was like, you know, why not? Why, you know? But I relapsed just before I went away, and so I came home, and I was alone, the first day home, friends of mine that I had met through group and being in the program prior to going away were right there. One person in particular was a man named Bill G. And he was right there every day helping me. I didn't have any transportation. I live in a real rural area. He helped me. My water pump went on my, you know, I mean, just he helped me monetarily. He helped me spiritually. And within a month or so time, he had 3 years sober, and I was working on a year, and he became my significant other. And he's a very loving, caring person, and we've been so excited about coming to this convention for like the past 2 months. And Tuesday, he was to come pick me up for work and give me a ride to work, and he was late, and he's never late. Bill is talk about service work, always, always service work. His daughter was home for the spring break. He had a 15-year-old daughter, and he has a 12-year-old daughter, and she couldn't wake Daddy up. I had my neighbor take me to the house, and Bill died in the ambulance on the way to the hospital on Tuesday this week. My church family gathered around, my NA family, AA and NA, I attend both, although I don't consider myself an alcoholic, but it's... It's always a possibility because I'm such a compulsive person. I was real torn as to what to do, you know. Do I stay home and grieve, or do I come and be with people that have been where I've been and have done what I've done, and what would Bill want me to do, you know? And I know what Bill would want me to do. Bill was so loving and so caring, and I'm here today, and I saw this in the brochure. I was over at Principles and something about the Principles, and I saw the Never Alone, and I'm feeling very much that today. Although I've been talking to him like crazy, I just wouldn't be alone today had things been different this week. And I know that I'm not alone. I'm a Christian woman, and I'm never alone as far as, you know, my higher power and now I have a guardian angel as well. And I just wanted to talk about Bill a minute and just kind of, I'm just walking around feeling like I'm so full and so stuffed with all this emotion, and I just wanted to share it. So thanks for letting me share.
I'm Daryl, and I'm a recovering addict.
Hi, Daryl.
And for Daryl, the war's over, and I lost. And I thank God that I don't have to fight anymore. I'm going to give my buddy here from Sweden a hug. Some friends of mine, one of my sponsees and a friend of mine, we just decided to come to this meeting, and never alone, nothing is ever out of order. My clean date is January the 28th, 1987. Which means I've been here over 17 years. And in that period of time, I've been through a lot. And listening to what the young lady just shared gave me the necessary strength that I needed to come up here and share. On the January the 3rd, 1987, after 29 years of using, at 3 o'clock in the morning in Washington, D.C., on a strip at 15th Independence Avenue Southeast, when it was all gone. I mean, all gone. All the dope was gone. All the coke was gone. All the money was gone. All the will to live was gone. I found out that I never was alone. 'Cause 3 o'clock in the morning, I said, God, please, if you're so loving, if you're so caring, why don't you just let me die? The next day, I went and knocked on a church door, and this priest that had been my high school teacher told me a long time ago I had a problem. Opened the door, and I told him that I was ready to go get some help. I went into treatment on January the 5th of 87, weighing 121 pounds, one step away from cirrhosis of the liver, dehydrated, no working veins. While I was in treatment, I'm also a recovering Catholic. I go to church today out of love, not out of fear, right? You know, because I got a lot of whippings in the name of Jesus Christ. You know, boy, if you talk back to the nun, God gonna get you. If you tear that white shirt, God gonna punish you. And if you lose that school book, God gonna kill you. Right? So me and God wasn't cool. But after being in treatment 14 days, I heard something that I'd never heard before in my life, and that is, Daryl, as long as you live, you ain't ever gotta use again if you don't want to. And even if you want to, you don't have to. At that time, I was 35 years old, and I said my first honest prayer when I got back to my room. And that was, God, please, please, God, if you give me one more chance, just one more chance at this thing called life, I'll spend the rest of my life helping somebody else. I was a hobo, not homeless. I was a hobo when I came to Narcotics Anonymous. I was urinating in my clothes, messing in my clothes, flies was following me around in January. After getting out of treatment, a guy with a high school diploma and 2 years of college, I was making $40 a week cleaning the toilets in the cafeteria, the same elementary school I used to go to, with people laughing at me every day, pointing their finger at me every day, saying, look at Murray's son. Don't make no sense. That boy got all that education. He ain't nothing but a junkie. They talked about Murray's son so bad she stopped going to that church, the church she had been going to for over 50 years. When I got to Narcotics Anonymous, I just needed to know that somebody cared. And you people extended your hands, held out your arms, and gave me a hug and said, I love you, with no strings attached. And to keep coming back. Today I work for one of the most powerful organizations in the world, and it's not the government. I'm one of the few black program administrators this agency has. But never alone is the topic. On January the 3rd, on September the 5th of 2001 was the most traumatic day of my life. I had 14 years clean, and the woman that had always been there, if I was in prison, if I was homeless, always been there. As a matter of fact, this woman took me in off the street, and within hours, because of my addiction, I stole $20 out of her pocketbook and went and got high. On March the 5th, 2001, this lady went home to God, and that lady was my mama. I got to the hospital at 5:15. My mother had passed at 5 o'clock. I cried on my brother's shoulder from 5:15 to 5:30. From 5:30 to 6 o'clock, the Creator took over, because I was in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting at 6 o'clock. And you couldn't have told me that when my best girl passed, I would be in the meeting an hour later, but I was. What I'm saying is, never alone. Whenever I think there's a gap between me and God, I got to ask myself, who moved? Because He's always been there. And all I've been doing for the last 17 years is, before I go anywhere, before I left Washington to come down here, I sent the Creator out the door first. I say, God, You go first and let me follow You. Because I've discovered one of the secrets to staying clean, and that's asking God to go first. Because for the last 17 years since I've been following the Creator, I haven't shot any dope. When it gets rough, and it will get rough in Narcotics Anonymous, people you love are going to die. You're going to lose jobs. It's going to get rough. But one thing I've done since being here is this: tie a knot in the rope and hold on, and believe that every time I hold on, the Creator will bless me with the ability to go on.
I want to thank everyone who shared, and at this time, can we have a moment of silence followed by the serenity prayer? God, grant us serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Keep the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Keep coming back. Thank you.